Chapter 2. If you were to hold this book up to a mirror, you would see at once how confusing it is to read letters and words when they are reflected back to you. In fact, the entire world looks confusing in a mirror, almost as if there is a whole other world beyond the shiny silver surface, exactly the same as the world we live in, except backward. Life is perplexing enough without thinking about other worlds staring back at you from the mirror, which is why people who spend a great deal of time looking in the mirror tend to have trouble thinking about anything except whatever secrets they discover after so much reflection, such as a previously unknown sibling who was already watching them at that very moment. The Baudelaire orphans, of course, had not spent very much time looking in mirrors recently, as they'd been quite preoccupied, a word which here means in desperate and mysterious circumstances brought about by Count Olaf. But even if they had spent every waking moment staring at their own reflections, they would not have been prepared for the perplexing sight waiting for them at the end of the sloping lawn. When Violet, Klaus and Sunny at last caught up with Kit Snicket, it felt as if they had stepped into the world on the opposite side of the mirror, without even knowing it. Impossible as it seemed, the lawn deposited the children at the roof of a building, but a building that lay flat on the ground instead of rising up toward the sky. The Baudelaire shoes were inches from the roof's glittering shingles, where a large sign read, Hotel Denouement. Below the sign, farther from the orphans, was a row of windows with the number 9 emblazoned on each of their shutters. The row was very long, stretching out to the left and right of the Baudelaires, so far that they couldn't see the end of it. Below this row of windows was another, with the number 8 emblazoned on the shutters, and then another row with 7, and so on, the numbers getting farther and farther away from the Baudelaires, all the way down to 0. Protruding from one of the 0 windows was a strange funnel, which was spewing a thick white fog toward the siblings, covering a set of stairs leading to a large curved archway, one story above, marked entrance. The building was constructed from strange, shimmering bricks, and here and there on the building were large, strange flowers and patches of dark green moss, which all lay out on the ground in front of the children. After a moment, one of the shutters opened, and in an instant the Baudelaires realized why the Hotel Denouement seemed so perplexing. They had not been staring at the building at all, but at its reflection in an enormous pond. The actual hotel stood at the far end of the pond and was reflected onto the pond's surface. Normally, of course, it is easy to tell a building from its reflection in a body of water, but whoever had designed the Hotel Denouement had added several features to confuse passers-by. For one thing, the building did not stand up straight, but tilted toward the ground at a precise angle, so that the pond only reflected the hotel, and none of the surrounding landscape and sky. Also, all of the hotel's signage, which is simply a fancy word meaning signs, was written backward, so the numbers on the windows could only be read correctly in the pond, and the words on the roof of the actual hotel read, Tnemuened Lito. Finally, some hard-working gardener had managed to grow lilies and moss on the bricks of the hotel, the same sort of lilies and moss that grow on the surface of ponds. The three siblings looked down at the pond, and then up at the hotel, back and forth, several times, before they were able to get their bearings, a phrase which here means, stop staring at this perplexing sight and direct their attention to Kit Snicket.
"Over here, Baudelaires!" the pregnant woman called,
and the children saw that Kit had taken a seat on an enormous blanket laid out on the lawn. The blanket was heaped with enough food to feed an army,
had an army decided that morning to invade a pond. There were 3 loaves of bread, each baked into a different shape, lined up in front of little bowls of butter, jam, and what looked like melted chocolate. Alongside the bread was an enormous basket containing all sorts of pastries, from muffins to doughnuts to custard eclairs, which happened to be a favourite of Klaus's. There were 2 round tins containing quiche, which is a sort of pie made of eggs, cheese and vegetables, and a large platter of smoked fish, and a wooden tray piled high with a pyramid of fruit. 3 glass pitchers held 3 different kinds of juice, and there were silver pots containing coffee and tea, and laid out in a sort of fan was silverware with which to eat it all, and 3 napkins that were monogrammed, a word which here means had the initials VB, KB, and SB embroidered on them. Sit down, Kit said, taking a bite of a pastry covered in powdered sugar. As I said, we don't have much time, but that's no excuse for not eating well. Help yourselves to anything you like. Where did all this food come from? Klaus asked. One of our associates laid it out for us, Kit said. It is a policy of our organization that all picnics travel separately from the volunteers. If our enemies capture the picnic, they won't get their clutches on us. And if our enemies capture us, they won't get the picnic. That's something to remember during the next couple of days as you participate in what one of our enemies calls the perpetual struggle for room and food. Please try the marmalade. It's delicious. The Baudelaires felt dizzy, as if their heads were still spinning from the ride through the shrubbery, and Violet reached into her pocket to find a ribbon. The conversation was so bewildering that the eldest Baudelaire wanted to concentrate as hard as she did when she was dreaming up an invention. Tying her hair up helped Violet focus her inventing mind, but before she could find a ribbon, Kit smiled kindly at her and produced a ribbon of her own. She gestured for the eldest Baudelaire to sit down, and with a gentle look in her eyes, the distraught and pregnant woman tied Violet's hair up herself. "You look just like your father," Kit sighed. He wore the same frown whenever he was confused, although he almost never tied his hair up in a ribbon when he solved the problem. "Please, Baudelaires, eat your brunch, and I'll try to catch you up on our current predicament. By the time you're eating your second pastry, I hope your questions will be answered." The Baudelaires sat down, spread their monogrammed napkins on their laps and began to eat, surprised to find that they were just as hungry for brunch as they were curious for information. Violet took 2 slices of dark wheat bread and made herself a sandwich of smoked fish, deciding to try the chocolate spread afterward if she still had room. Klaus served himself some quiche and took a custard eclair, and Sunny rooted through the tray of fruit until she found a grapefruit, which she began to peel with her unusually sharp teeth. Kit smiled at the children, dabbed at her own mouth with a napkin embroidered with KS, and began to speak. "The building at the other end of the pond is the Hotel des Noumans," she began. "Have you ever stayed there?" "No," Violet said. "Our parents took us to the Hotel Preludio once for the weekend." "That's right," Klaus said. "I'd almost forgotten."
"Carrots for breakfast," Sunny said, remembering the weekend with a smile.
"Well, the Hotel Preludio is a lovely place," Kit said. "But the Hotel des Noumans is more than that. For years it's been a place where our volunteers can gather to exchange information, discuss plans to defeat our enemies, and return books we've borrowed from one another. Before the schism, there were countless places that served such purposes. Bookstores and banks, restaurants and stationery stores, cafes and laundromats, opium dens and geodesic domes. People of nobility and integrity could gather nearly everywhere." "Those must have been wonderful times," Violet said. "So I'm told," Kit said. I was 4 years old when everything changed. Our organization shattered, and it was as if the world shattered too, and one by one the safe places were destroyed. There was a large scientific laboratory, but the volunteer who owned the place was murdered. There was an enormous cavern, but a treacherous team of realtors claimed it for themselves. And there was an immense headquarters high in the Mortmain Mountains, but it was destroyed, Klaus said quietly. We were there shortly after the fire.
Of course you were, Kit said. I'd forgotten.
Well, the headquarters was the penultimate safe place.
Penul who?
Sunny asked. Penultimate means next to last, Kit explained. When the mountain headquarters was destroyed, only the Hotel Denouement was left. In every other place on Earth, nobility and integrity are vanishing quickly. She sighed and gazed out at the still, flat surface of the pond.
If we're not careful, they'll vanish completely.
Can you imagine a world in which wickedness and deception were running rampant?
Yes,
Violet said quietly, and her siblings nodded in agreement. They knew that the word rampant meant without anyone to stop it, and they could imagine such a world very easily, because they had been living in one. Since their first encounter with Count Olaf, the villain's wickedness and deception had run rampant all over the Baudelaire's lives, and it had been very difficult for the children to keep from becoming villains themselves. In fact, when they considered all of their recent actions, they weren't entirely sure they hadn't performed a few acts of villainy, even if they'd had very good reasons for doing so. When we were in the mountains, Klaus said, we found a message one of the volunteers had written. It said that VFD would be gathering at the Hotel Denouement on Thursday. Kit nodded and reached to pour herself some more coffee.
Was the message addressed to J.S.? She asked.
Yes, Violet said. We assumed the initials stood for Jacques Snicket.
Brother?
Sunny asked. Kit looked sadly down at her pastry.
Yes. Jacques was my brother.
Because of the schism, I haven't seen either of my brothers for years, and it was only recently that I learned of his murder.
We met Jacques very briefly, Violet said, referring to the time the Baudelaires had spent in the care of an entire village.
You must have been shocked to receive the news.
Saddened, Kit said, but not shocked. So many good people have been slain by our enemies.
She reached across the blanket and patted the hands of all three Baudelaires in turn.
I know I don't have to tell you how terrible it feels to lose a family member. I felt so terrible that I vowed I would never leave my bed.
What happened? Klaus said. Kit smiled.
I got hungry, she said, and when I opened the refrigerator, I found another message waiting for me.
Verbal fridge dialogue, Violet said. The same code as the message we found in the mountains.
Yes, Kit said. You three had been spotted by another volunteer. We knew, of course, that you children had nothing to do with my brother's death, no matter what that ridiculous reporter wrote in the Daily Punctilio. The Baudelaires looked at one another. They had almost forgotten about Geraldine Julien, a journalist who had caused them much inadvertent trouble, a phrase which here means, published in the newspaper, that the Baudelaire orphans had murdered Jack Snicket, whom she mistakenly identified as Count Olaf. The siblings had found it necessary to disguise themselves several times so as not to be captured by the authorities.
"Who spotted us?" Klaus asked.
"Quigley Quagmire, of course," she said.
"He found you in the Mortmain Mountains and then managed to contact me when you were separated from him. He and I managed to meet each other in an abandoned bathrobe emporium where we disguised ourselves as mannequins while we figured out what to do next. Finally, we managed to send a volunteer factual dispatch to Captain Widdershins' submarine.
Queequeg,
Sunny said, naming the underwater vehicle where she and her siblings had recently spent a dreadful few days. Our plan was to meet up with you at Briny Beach, Kit said, and proceed to the Hotel Denouement for the VFD gathering. But where is Quigley? Violet asked. Kit sighed and took a sip of her coffee. He was very eager to see you, she said, but he received word from his siblings. Duncan and Isadora, Klaus cried. We haven't seen them for quite some time. Are they safe? I hope so, Kit answered. The message they sent was incomplete, but it sounded as if they were being attacked in mid-air while flying over the sea. Quigley went to help them immediately in a helicopter we stole from a nearby botanist. If all goes well, you'll see all three Quagmire triplets on Thursday. That is, unless you cancel the gathering.
Cancel it? Violet asked. Why would we do a thing like that?
The last safe place may not be safe after all, Kit said sadly. If that's the case, you Baudelaires will need to send VFD a signal that Thursday's gathering is cancelled.
Why not safe? Sunny asked.
Kit smiled at the youngest Baudelaire, opened the cardboard folder that the Baudelaires had retrieved from the taxicab, and began to page through the papers inside. I'm sorry this is so disorganized, she said. I haven't had time to update my commonplace book. My brother used to say that if only one had a little more time to do some important reading, all the secrets in the world would become clear. I've scarcely looked at these maps, poems, and blueprints that Charles sent me, or chosen wallpaper for the baby's room. Wait one moment, Baudelaires, I'll find it. The children helped themselves to more brunch, trying to be patient as Kit looked through her folder, pausing from time to time to smooth out the particularly crumpled papers. At last she held up a tiny piece of paper, no bigger than a caterpillar, which was rolled into a tiny scroll. "Here it is," she said. "A waiter slipped this to me last night by hiding it inside a cookie." She handed it to Klaus, who unrolled the paper and squinted at it behind his glasses. "J.S. has checked in," he read out loud, "and requested tea with sugar. My brother sends his regards. Sincerely, Frank." "Usually, the messages inside the cookies are just superstitious nonsense," Kit said. "But recently the restaurant has changed management. You can understand why this message made me so distraught, Baudelaires. Someone is posing as my brother and has checked into the hotel shortly before our entire organization is scheduled to arrive."
"Count Olaf," Violet said.
"It could be Olaf," Kit agreed. "But there are plenty of villains who are all too eager to be impostors. Those two villains in the mountains, for example."
"Or Hugo, Colette, or Kevin," Klaus said,
naming three people the children had met at Caligari Carnival, who had since joined Olaf's troop and had agreed to meet him at the hotel. "But this J.S. isn't necessarily a wicked person," Kit said. "Plenty of noble people would check into the Hotel Denouement and order sugar in their tea. Not to sweeten it, of course. Tea should be as bitter as a wormwood, my brother used to say, and as sharp as a two-edged sword. But as a signal. Our comrades and our enemies are all after the same thing, the vessel for Disaccharides."
"Sugar bell," Sunny said,
sharing a look of dismay with her siblings. The Baudelaires knew that Kit was referring to a sugar bowl that was of great importance to VFD and to Count Olaf, who was desperate to get his hands on it. The children had searched for this sugar bowl from the highest peak of the Mortmain Mountains to the underwater depths of the Gorgonian Grotto, but had neither found this sugar bowl nor learned why it was so important.
"Exactly," Kit said. "The sugar bowl is on its way to the hotel even as we speak, and I'd hate to think what would happen if our enemies got a hold of it. I can't imagine anything worse.
except perhaps if our enemies somehow got a hold of the medusoid mycelium. The Baudelaire's look of dismay augmented, a word which here means increased dramatically as they realized they had some bad news for Kit Snicket. I'm afraid that Count Olaf has a small sample of the medusoid mycelium, Violet said, referring to a deadly fungus the children had encountered while exploring the ocean. Its sinister spores had infected poor Sunny, who might not have survived had her siblings not managed to dilute the poison in the nick of time. We had a few spores locked tight in a diving helmet, but Olaf managed to steal it. Kit gasped. Then we most certainly have no time to lose. The three of you must infiltrate the Hotel Denouement and observe J.S. If J.S. is a noble person, then you must make sure that the sugar bowl falls into his or her hands. But if J.S. is a villainous person, you must make sure it does not. And I'm sad to say that this won't be as easy as it sounds. It doesn't sound easy at all, Klaus said. That's the spirit, Kit said, popping a grape into her mouth. Of course you won't be alone. Showing up early is one of the signs of a noble person, so there are other volunteers already at the hotel. You may even recognize some volunteers who have been observing you during your travels, but you may also recognize some of your enemies, as they will be posing as noble people by showing up early as well. While you try to observe the impostor, various impostors will undoubtedly be observing you. But how can we tell the volunteers from the enemies? Violet asked. The same way you always do, Kit said. When you first met Count Olaf, did you have any doubt he was a treacherous person? When you first met the Quagmire triplets, did you have any doubt that they were charming and resourceful? You'll have to observe everyone you see, and make such judgments yourselves. You Baudelaires will become flâneurs.
Expound, Sunny said,
which meant something along the lines of, I'm afraid I don't know what that word means. Flâneurs, Kit explained, are people who quietly observe their surroundings, intruding only when it is absolutely necessary. Children make excellent flâneurs, as so few people notice them. You'll be able to pass unnoticed in the hotel. We can't pass unnoticed, Klaus said. The Daily Punctilio has published our photographs in the paper. Someone is sure to recognize us and report our presence to the authorities. My brother's right, Violet said. Three children just can't go wandering around a hotel observing things. Kit smiled and lifted one corner of the picnic blanket. Underneath were three parcels wrapped in paper. The man who sent me the message about the impostor, she said, is a member of VFD. He suggested that he hire the three of you as concierges. Your uniforms are in these packets.
Expound again, Sunny said.
Klaus had taken out his commonplace book and was taking notes on what Kit was saying. The opportunity to define a word, however, was enough to interrupt his research. A concierge, he said to his sister, is someone who performs various tasks for guests in the hotel. It's the perfect disguise, Kit said. You'll be doing everything from fetching packages to recommending restaurants. You'll be allowed in every corner of the hotel, from the rooftop sunbathing salon to the laundry room in the basement, and no one will suspect you're there to spy on them. Frank will help you as best he can, but be very careful. The schism has turned many brothers into enemies. Under no circumstances should you reveal your true selves to Frank's treacherous, identical brother, Ernest.
Identical? Violet repeated. If they're identical, how can we tell them apart?
Kit took one last sip of her coffee. Please try to pay attention, she said. You'll have to observe everyone you see and make such judgments yourselves. That's the only way to tell a villain from a volunteer. Now, is everything perfectly clear? The Baudelaires looked at one another. They could not remember a time in their lives when everything had been less clear than at this very moment, when every sentence Kit uttered seemed to be more mysterious than the last. Klaus looked at the notes he had made in his commonplace book and tried to summarize the errand Kit had outlined for them. "We're going to disguise ourselves as concierge," he said carefully, "in order to become flâneurs and observe an impostor who is either a volunteer or an enemy." "A man named Frank is going to help us," Violet said, "but his brother Ernest will try to stop us." "There are several other volunteers in the hotel," Klaus said, "but several other enemies as well."
"Sugar Bell," Sunny said.
"Very good," Kit said approvingly. "When you're done with your brunch, you can change into your uniforms behind that tree and signal to Frank that you're on your way. Do you have something you can throw into the pond?" Violet reached into her pocket and drew out a stone she had picked up on Briny Beach. "I imagine this will do," she said. "That's perfect," Kit said. "Frank should be watching from one of the windows of the hotel, unless, of course, Ernest has intercepted my message and is watching instead. In any case, when you're ready to meet him, you can throw the rock into the pond, and he'll see the ripples and know you're on your way." "Aren't you coming with us?" Klaus asked. "I'm afraid not," Kit said. "I have other errands to perform. While Quigley tries to resolve the situation in the sky, I will try to resolve the situation in the sea, and you'll have to resolve the situation here on land."
"Us alone?" Sunny asked.
She meant something along the lines of, "Do you really think three children can accomplish all this by themselves?" And her siblings were quick to translate. "Look at yourselves," Kit said, and gestured toward the pond. The Baudelaire stood up and stepped close to the water's edge and leaned over the pond so their reflections appeared in front of the roof of the hotel. "When your parents died," Kit said, "you were just a young girl, Violet, but you've matured. Those aren't the eyes of a young girl. They're the eyes of someone who has faced endless hardship. And look at you, Klaus. You have the look of an experienced researcher, not just the young reader who lost his parents in a fire. And Sunny, you're standing on your own 2 feet, and so many of your teeth are growing in that they don't appear to be of such unusual size as they were when you were a baby. You're not children any more, Baudelaires. You're volunteers, ready to face the challenges of a desperate and perplexing world. You must go to the Hotel Denouement, and Quigley must go to the self-sustaining hot-air mobile home, and I must go to a coral formation of dubious quality where an inflatable raft should be waiting. But if Quigley manages to construct a net big enough to capture all those eagles, and I manage to contact Captain Widdershins and have him meet me at a certain clump of seaweed, we'll be here on Thursday. Hector should manage to land his self-sustaining hot-air mobile home on the roof, even with us all aboard." "Hector," Violet said, remembering the man who had been so kind to them in the village of foul devotees and his enormous invention that had carried him away from the Baudelaires. "He's safe?" "I hope so," Kit said quietly, and stood up. She turned her face from the Baudelaires, and her voice seemed to tremble as she talked. "Don't worry about the brunch things, Baudelaires. One of my comrades has volunteered to clean up after our picnic. He's a wonderful gentleman. You'll meet him on Thursday, if all goes well. If all goes well..." But she could not finish her sentence. Instead, she gave a little whimper, and her shoulders began to shake as the Baudelaires looked at one another. "When someone is crying, of course, the noble thing to do is to comfort them. But if someone is trying to hide their tears, it may also be noble to pretend you do not notice them, so they will not be embarrassed." For a moment, the children could not choose between the noble activity of comforting a crying person and the noble activity of not embarrassing a crying person. But as Kit Snicket began to cry harder and harder, they decided to comfort her. Violet clasped one of her hands. Klaus put an arm around her shoulder. Sunny hugged Kit above the knees, which was as high as she could reach.
"Why are you crying?" Violet asked. "Why are you so distraught?"
"Because all will not go well," Kit said finally. "You may as well know that now, Baudelaire's. These are dark days, as dark as a crow flying through a pitch-black night. Our errands may be noble, but we will not succeed. I suspect that before Thursday I'll see your signal and know that all our hopes have gone up in smoke."
"But how will we signal?" Klaus asked. "Which code should we use?"
"Any code you devise," Kit said. "We'll be watching the skies."
With that, she shook herself out of the children's comforting arms and hurried away from the pond without another word to the siblings. Violet, Klaus, and Sunny watched her figure get smaller and smaller as she ran up the lawn, perhaps on her way back to the taxicab, or to join up with another mysterious volunteer, until at last she disappeared over the slope. For a moment none of the children said a word, and then Sunny reached down and picked up the parcels.
"Change?"
she asked.
"I guess so," Violet said with a sigh. "It seems a shame to waste all this food, but I can't eat any more brunch."
"Perhaps the volunteer who's cleaning it up will bring it to someone else," Klaus said.
"Perhaps," Violet agreed. "There's so much about VFD that remains a mystery."
"Perhaps we'll learn more when we're flaneurs," Klaus said. "If we observe everything around us, perhaps some of these mysteries will become clear. I hope so."
"I hope so too," Violet said.
"Also hope so,"
Sunny said, and the Baudelaires said no more. Leaving their brunch behind, they ducked behind the tree Kit had suggested and held up the picnic blanket as a sort of curtain, so each child could change into a concierge disguise in relative privacy. Violet buckled a shiny silver belt with the words Hotel Denouement printed in large black letters all the way around it, and hoped that she would be able to tell the difference between Frank and his treacherous brother Ernest. Klaus adjusted his stiff, round hat, which had a firm, elastic band that tucked under the chin, and hoped he would know which of the guests were volunteers and which were villains. And Sunny slipped her fingers into the clean, white gloves, surprised that Frank had managed to find them in such a small size, and hoped that she would be able to investigate the impostor posing as Jacques Snicket. When the three children were all wearing their uniforms, they walked back to the edge of the pond and put on the last part of their disguises, three enormous pairs of sunglasses, reminding them of a disguise Count Olaf had worn when pretending to be a detective. The sunglasses were so large that they covered not only their eyes but a great portion of their faces. Klaus could even wear his regular glasses underneath them without anyone noticing. As they gazed through the sunglasses at their own reflections, they wondered if the disguises were enough to keep them out of the hands of the authorities long enough to solve all the mysteries that surrounded them, and they wondered if it was true what Kit Snicket had said, that they weren't children any more, but volunteers, ready to face the challenges of a desperate and perplexing world. The Baudelaires hoped so. But when Violet took the stone in her gloved hand and threw it out into the middle of the pond, they wondered if their hopes would sink in the same way. They watched as the surface of the pond rippled, disrupting the reflection of the hotel. The children watched the shingles of the roof turn into a blur, and they watched the word denouement disappear, as if it were written on a piece of paper someone was crumpling in their hand. They watched each row of windows melt together, and they watched all the flowers and moss dissolve into nothing as the stone sank deeper and deeper into the pond and the circular ripples spread further and further across the reflection. The The Baudelaire orphans watched this reflected world disappear and wondered if their hopes would also disappear into the strange, rippling world of the Hotel Denouement and all the mysteries and secrets that lay deep inside.
Thank you.